What you're about to hear is unsupervised. Welcome back to Unsupervised Season 2, Episode 6. I'm your host, Colin Beswick, joined today by fellow Stanley Cup of Chowder staff writers and editors, Sky and Sean. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing fine, how are you?
Doing good, having a little bit of a whiskey here after a long day, ready to talk some hockey.
So. Whiskey sounds good.
Yeah. We are recording on a Monday night, and it's already been a long week, so definitely need it.
But, it's just going to get so much longer.
Yeah,
the holiday season is so, like, I've never truly experienced any other time of the year where a week can feel like a month, just because of all the crap you've got to do in just a short amount of time, and then it feels like it blew by once Christmas Eve and day are over with. I guarantee you, I will remember nothing about the myriad of things I did in the last week.
Yeah, you guys got all your Christmas shopping done? Because that's what I spent like all weekend doing.
Listen to me, Colin. This is very carefully planned, and it's probably going to be done right by December 23rd.
Attaboy. just buy booze. Booze is the best gift for everyone.
Wait,
I have a secret Santa for a toddler. I can't give them booze.
You shouldn't give them booze. To be clear.
That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's busy time of year for all of us. On the bright side, the Bruins managed to pick up 4 points over the last two games, obviously a pretty huge win against what's quickly becoming maybe the Bruins' biggest rival, modern rival, in the Toronto Maple Leafs, which is a topic that a lot of people are talking about. I was wondering if you guys think, you know, are the Montreal Canadiens still the Bruins' true rival, or do you think that Toronto has sort of crept in over the last few years?
You could take it first, Sky.
Okay.
Me first?
No, fine. I'll take the buck on this one. I think Toronto recently has become more obnoxious. For a time, I thought that it was actually Ottawa because, for whatever reason, they just couldn't get past the freaking Senators no matter what they did. But that was all just regular season stuff. Toronto recently can't stand them. They just can't stand the Bruins. They can't stand anything about them. The fans are, whenever any other team comes into town, they're pretty respectful. The second Boston comes into town or they come to Boston, their dander is so raised, they're angry, and you just can't imagine, at least especially a couple of years ago when the Leafs were so completely out of the running and no one really cared about anything other than the fact that the Leafs were so bad, that they pick up such a viciousness to them. I never thought that I would have such strong opinions about the Leafs that I normally would reserve for the Habs, because I hate the Habs still. Always will.
Never
won't. Never won't. Scum of the earth. Hate all things they stand for and all that. But the Leafs are getting there. I feel like one more first round of this, and they will be right up in my upper echelon of haterdom, I guess.
Yeah, so I'm curious what Sean thinks, but I don't really have any issue with the Leafs themselves. The fan base can be challenging at times, is the nice way to say that, I would say. But I actually enjoy watching the Leafs play, especially in their current form with all the sort of offensive power that they have. But it is
with talent. You can just call it talent.
Yeah. They have a lot of that. Definitely a lot of talent. But what do you think, Sean?
Huge step up.
I mean, I think it's just a matter of who in the division is good and challenges the Bruins at the time. Like, I think we're in a day and age that, well, I mean, in previous years, like when we're talking like the 70s and everything, when this when this rivalry was, you know, sort of at its peak, like salary cap wasn't a thing. So, you know, these two, you know, the Bruins and Canadians can kind of spend and keep good teams every year, where that's harder to do now. And I think we're kind of in a day and age where rivalries, at least off the ice, when it comes to kind of like fan bases, is more of performance based. And, you know, the Bruins and the Leafs have been good for these last couple of years and obviously have met in the playoffs. And so I just think that, you know, that kind of plays into it. I mean, they've always kind of been like sort of a rival, and it's just, you know, at its peak right now. And then when the Leafs are not good come April, you know, it won't be as big of a deal. And, you know, the Buffalo Sabres, you know, if they get better, and the Canadians, which I don't really see a bright future for them, you know, they could possibly become, you know, bigger rivals as the Leafs kind of step down, as the, you know, the Tavares contract kills the entire franchise.
So,
you touched on something that I'm terrified of. Buffalo fans are nuts to a man, every single one of them. I don't want to see even one game where we could say they could become their rivals, because they get the knives out for anything.
Yo, I actually like Buffalo fans. I have a ton of respect for, you know, fans that can hang in there with some pretty terrible teams, at least in my lifetime. But
with other people's lifetimes, your father and your grandfather's all lifetimes.
I think Sean's right for sure when it comes to rivalries. Like the quality of the team is probably the biggest factor. You know, I think that's the large reason why the Canadiens rivalry has been lackluster over the last two or three seasons. It's just they haven't been very good. But with Toronto, I don't know. I don't think it's just that, you know, we play them more than most other teams, or that they're good. I think there's some legitimate hatred there between players and fans, obviously, with you know, the 4-1 playoff loss. And but also
it's always not just that, it's always that something stupid happens in these games. Seemingly like clockwork.
Beat me to it. I was just gonna say, I think we have to at least touch on, like, you know, it's hard. There's no true starting point because the teams have been playing for 100 years. But, you know, obviously there was the Kadri hit on Wingles last year, which was just awful. And I think, you know, we've sort of seen that boil over at different points up until this past weekend, where we saw Toronto take exception to a cross check from McAvoy and Marner. And then, you know, Hyman's losing his mind, running around the ice trying to get McAvoy, and eventually succeeds, obviously. But I think as much as the talent's a big part of it, I think there's some legitimate bad blood there. And also, these teams are generally playing for something when they're playing each other, even in the regular season. You know, those points are huge points between the two of them. So it's made for a very entertaining, I can't call it a new rivalry, but maybe a reinvigorated rivalry.
Reignited rivalry.
Yeah, there you go.
It's a rebooted rivalry. Always works out. Just ask Hollywood.
Yeah, I'll say it's a little one-sided, I would say, in the Bruins' favor. I mean, but that team's legit.
I won't go that far.
No,
it's definitely been back and forth. I'll be right out and say, sometimes Boston has just kind of laid eggs against them, even when crazy crap happened, and I think that just made it even more vicious. Because I think in some Leafs fans' minds, they quote unquote know that this team can be better than them. And then Boston just kind of drags them right back down into physical possession style hockey that just really doesn't play well to their strengths. And it must drive their fans absolutely crazy.
Yeah, there's that.
I think that really works out.
There's that. And there's also, you know, Pasternak. Big part of it, too. Yeah. Dude loves to score against the Leafs.
I love watching him score, so Leafs games are kind of circled on my calendars.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever seen an opponent who just absolutely, whatever the reason is, just absolutely dominates one team seemingly every time they play. But no complaints here. I'll keep watching that.
Every time. I'll get there early.
Yep. Don't mind me. Just pouring more whiskey here. But we should obviously segueing from the Leafs into, you know, we were talking about some of the stupider things we've seen on ice over the last few matchups. Obviously, the last couple of days, big topic was McAvoy returning from quite a long concussion recovery, well over a month.
Terrifyingly wrong. Very, 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 very scarily long.
Yeah, it is. Whether you're a fan, media, family, just whatever, seeing someone out that long with a head injury is absolutely, like, it's sobering for sure. But on the other hand, you know, you hope that the league and teams on their own are taking the head injuries more seriously. And I'd like to think that that factors into it too, where they're making sure that these players are absolutely ready to come back before they do. But, you know, with McAvoy, he comes back in his second game. And like I said, you know, Zach Hyman, of all people, is, you know, chasing him around the ice and finally lands a pretty obviously egregious hit on him. Before we get into the suspension, I'm curious what your thoughts are on the hit. Is it as bad as those in Boston are making it out to be? Is it, you know, did you think it was not bad at all, like some in Toronto are? I'm just curious to gauge how you guys feel.
I think, I mean, when you look at the punishment, it's probably fair. Like, it was he was obviously targeting McAvoy. I didn't get a chance to watch explanation video, but it wasn't anything. I don't think it's maybe as bad as some are making out to be. It's all of who you're around, and but I don't think it was like a clean hit. Like some are saying that, you know, McAvoy was admiring his pass. I don't think that was true. But yeah, I mean, it was a pretty bad hit. It just all depends on who you're around and who you're hearing from that, you know, kind of determines if it's as bad as people are making out to be.
Yeah, I have some thoughts on the admiring your pass stuff I've been seeing around, but we try and keep the podcast pretty PG, so I'll leave it alone. But
yet you brought me on board.
Yeah.
My
thoughts on it are I was there. I saw it happen in real time. And I can tell you that Zach Hyman, every time you said he was chasing around the ice, he was practically trying to get that one hit off several times throughout the game. And he finally hit flush. To the idea that they were admiring his pass, that means that you just turn up ice and go after the freaking puck. If you are, say, a Zach Hyman type who doesn't have to go and make that kind of hit, it's ridiculous to me that he didn't get immediately penalized for it, or if he didn't, or even he got immediately picked up on. And frankly, almost a minute later, that whole kerfuffle at center ice was ridiculous. Then because they didn't catch him in the moment, it just asked for more bloodshed, and Chris Wagner was all but happy to oblige. And that's why so many people have ignored the fact that, in my opinion, the referees, especially in that game, dropped the ball like nobody else. Like, at least in some cases, it was the offsetting penalties they sometimes gave out was fine. The rest of the game was ridiculous. They had no control over what was going on. And the few times they tried to, it was like they were just trying to separate two kids that on the playground that just couldn't stand each other when they're throwing haymakers at each other. It was absolutely insane. It was a terrible, stupid hit that begot another terrible, stupid hit. And it's just another beautiful chapter in this stupid, stupid rivalry that has only gotten dumber and dumber with each passing game.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the refs. That was something I had, you know, here in my notes to mention too, because,
you know, it's obviously easy to bag on the officials, you know, oftentimes. Sometimes it's fair, sometimes it's not. I think at a high level in games like that, you know, the referee's job is as much to control the game as it is to actually, you know, do the minute-to-minute refereeing of a game. And I think they totally lost the plot in that game. You know, it got out of control, and they really did nothing to help calm it down. And again, I try not to get on too much, but that's one where if I'm the head of officials, I'm probably looking at that and maybe even saying, like, you know, here's some things you could have done better, because it should not have gotten to that point in this game, rivalry or not. You know, you sort of have to do your best to control. But on the hit itself, I did want to sort of give a little analysis on it too, because, you know, obviously we cover the Bruins. Some of us grew up fans of the Bruins. You know, so it can be tough to look at a hit impartially or objectively, but some of the stuff I'm seeing out there about the Hyman hit not being worth a penalty or let alone a suspension and all that stuff, I don't understand it. I know, Sean, you mentioned you didn't get a chance to watch the video, but it was pretty short and sweet from player safety. Said it was, and I quote, extremely late, that it was predatory, quote unquote, that it was high, quote unquote, and that McAvoy was wholly unsuspecting, quote unquote. I mean, that's pretty much...
Okay, much higher than your head and his elbow and from almost behind.
Yeah, and I think, again, I understand it. You know, if you're a Leafs fan or, unfortunately, a Leafs media member, we've seen as well. But I get it. Sometimes it's tough to objectively look at things that happens to me, happens to all of us. But the thing that I think a lot of people are really, really missing, and I'm glad that the player safety pointed out too, is that at no point did Charlie McAvoy have any idea that Hyman was coming in for that hit. He was turned, and Hyman follows a path all the way in as he takes his strides, where he is completely in a blind spot from McAvoy. And, you know, it was a predatory hit. We all know that. Even Leafs fans should be able to admit as much. And I just think that's where they're missing this. I know people brought up the Ryan Reeves hit on Tom Wilson, and I know no one's going to be objective about Tom Wilson. I get it. I'm guilty of it too. But I went
certainly not going to get any from me.
No, and I went back and looked at multiple angles over and over today to sort of compare the two, and I can see why people think they're similar, and there are some similarities. It is a bit of a blindside hit, but it's not the same. You know, Tom Wilson could see or had the ability to see that Ryan Reeves was coming. Should Ryan Reeves have laid that hit? No. Should he have been penalized? Yes. But you have to look at things in degrees and factor in all the context. And to me, that Hyman hit had absolutely no purpose other than to hurt Charlie McAvoy, which he had been trying to do practically all night. So I don't know. That's my two cents. That's me stepping off the pulpit there. But
well, the senator yield.
So I'm not a fan of it. I was pretty quick on the old Twitter machine to get on the pulpit and say, like, you know, it's just a filthy hit. And you know, I don't think Hyman's a dirty player. He has no track record of it. I know he's very well thought of, but you know, that happens. Clean players make bad hits. That was a bad hit. Which leads me into the Chris Wagner hit, which we have all experienced the joys of whataboutism. You know, anyone who covers a team that employs Bradley Marchand is going to get the butt Marchand, and we've all been there. I know that. We've all had to deal with that. So that happened with the Chris Wagner hit. Full disclosure, did not like the Wagner hit either. I think it's okay to say that, but I also think it's okay to say, like, I don't think it rose to the level of suspension. He got penalized, should have been penalized. It was absolutely an attempt to hurt one of their star players. Not a fan of it. Don't want it in the game. Curious what you guys think.
Pure retaliation. Just pure retaliation as far as I'm concerned. It's they didn't catch Hyman. The Bruins felt slighted, and they had been hearing on and on for days and days at that point that they weren't tough, they weren't all that physical. And even if, you know, the smart thing for a player to do is say, yeah, whatever, I'm in the NHL and you're not, shut up and move on with their day. You know, I'm sure, especially the way that game unfolded,
that there was that little back of the mind moment where they said, you know what? No, I'm going to show this guy what a real hit looks like. And I'm going to show him what's going to happen. And there you go. You also happen to take out Morgan Riley. And I'm sure they felt real good about it in the moment. It was entertaining as hell to watch in person. I will be man enough to admit that I kind of had a oh moment, but after thinking about it and really kind of going through that whole game and going through all the penalty minutes and all that, it was just a stupid predatory hit that came about because the referees didn't make the right call or didn't even make a call to begin with. So, yeah, predatory hit. Stupid, retaliatory, predatory hit.
All right, Sean, lay it on us. What do you think?
I mean, I'm still confused at what the penalties were with, like, the Hyman and Grizzlick thing. Because, like, I know McAvoy got a misconduct for equipment, right, during the fight.
Yes.
And then there's a cross-checking. So, and they were, like, at least what they were telling us in the press box, like, we were kind of getting, like, false information at first, and then they're, like, changing it. Like, initially with the Wagner thing, like, they told us, like, Stephen Camper, which obviously, like, wasn't true, and we all knew that in there.
They did. I was actually thinking for a second, I don't think he was on the ice for that, and then they had to correct that in the middle of the game, out loud on the PA. So I don't even know if they knew what the hell was going on.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. They did say it
intercom. Me the NHL gets things wrong. I don't believe that.
Yeah, so I don't know if the major how the penalties offset, because it was a 5-minute major for interference, mm-hmm. if I remember correctly.
Yes.
And then so there was some offsetting major on Grizzly. Yeah,
an equipment violation because his stuff wasn't tucked in or something. I don't know. I know.
Yeah, his uniform came off and it's supposed to be strapped in the back, but it's not like that's like a magic strap either. So I don't understand, like, what are you supposed to do, like, during a fight, like, hold your jersey down? I think that's not what the rule is made for. And I mean, the refs could have possibly bypassed that. The fact that they're playing at 5-on-5 at that time is what led to Chris Wagner on the ice, being on the ice. And I think if we're talking about, you know, 2-minute, you know, instigator for Grizzlick and then 3 minutes of power play time, you know, for the major with Hyman, you know, I think we don't see that hit happen. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, we see, you know, justice is served. Bruins might score a power play goal or even two. And, you know, we walk away from the game, you know, without that Wagner hit. I wasn't a fan of it. I actually missed it live because, like, I'm too busy, you know, trying to keep up and writing and getting the highlights out and everything because I was covering the game.
In fairness, that game happened at, like, 110 miles an hour, so I don't blame you at all if you missed anything.
That small window, I mean, the Hyman hit occurred 9:53, with 9:53 gone in the third, and then the Wagner thing was a minute later at 10:55 gone in the third. I'm not going to do the math to, like, to change that around, but, you know, so it was like a minute later, so I didn't quite see it live. I saw the replay and whatever, and, like, I remember in, like, the locker room Saturday night, you know, like, someone said to Wagner, I was turning around, I want to say it was like Krejci or something was where the mob was at the moment, and then Wagner kind of came in, and I think someone was like, what was up with that hit? And he just goes to him, you know, it was legal. And, you know, Bruce Cassidy said that, and then he, you know, he said that obviously when he was asked by the media. And I mean, it was definitely a charge. Like, I think it was right to call it a charge, but, you know, he was out to injure as well, and I don't really think that's something you want to see as a response from your organization, I think you want to play, you know, clean and like you don't like two wrongs don't make a right kind of thing. Mm. So I wasn't a fan of it. I understand where they come from, and then, you know, they try to reason with it by saying, you know, there was nothing back from the Leafs, which I don't think you're going to see anything back. I think it was, I don't know. You just, at that point in the game, I don't remember if it was 6-2 or if it was 6-1, whatever it was. I mean, it was a blowout.
Yes.
It was 6-2. Okay. Yeah. Cause Austin Matthews goal was at 9:30. So, you know, it's like 6-2, like let's just go home. And, you know, like Bruins had a game in Ottawa. I don't know what the Leafs were up to.
I don't think they
definitely didn't have a game. Are they playing right now?
They're probably playing right now. Let me just double check.
But, you know, it's just.
Yes.
You just kind of want to go home at that point, you know, like just call it a game. It was a good game and start over.
Yeah.
You're going to meet again. Where they meet in the spring, because they played three times now.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's a possibility you play in the playoffs and you just go about, you know, your business. So I don't know. I felt it was a little unnecessary. I understand why the Bruins are frustrated, but, you know, it's just kind of, you got to be more professional about it, in my opinion, and just kind of move on.
With Wagner, you can dissect it, and you probably we should really break it down frame by frame and look at all that stuff. But it wasn't as dirty, I guess, is the word I would use, as the Hyman hit, and I don't think it's really up for debate. But I think you can also clearly and objectively state the purpose of that hit was to hurt their star player, and I'm not okay with that. Yeah. Like I don't want it. There had already been, you know, a fight. Ended up being two or three or whatever there was there, but you know, I'm not a fan of it. Like you said, my parents, shout out to the Beswick family, you know, my dad always used to say, like, you know, nothing good happens after midnight or whatever, you know, when I was growing up, like, don't go out and do dumb stuff. But it's sort of like in garbage time in hockey, like, you sort of know, you know, when it gets to a blowout point and you have 5 or 6 minutes left, you know, there's going to be some dumb hits. There's going to be guys chasing each other around. There's going to be scrums. There might be a fight or two. And it's just like, don't. Like, especially if you're up, you're winning, just skate it out. Finish the game. Get on the plane. Get on the bus. Whatever. Like, there's just no need to risk your guys getting hurt, especially when you're already, like, decimated at this point.
But, oh, yeah.
But that's sort of, I'll use that as its own segue here into the current rally and cry within certain segments of not only the Bruins fan base, but Leafs fan base and probably others too, if I'm paying attention, is that, you know, do the Bruins and other teams need an enforcer? Is there a lack of toughness? You know, where's the grit? And I don't know, I've evolved, I guess, if that's the word we want to use, over the years on this. Growing up, I was absolutely a big fan of fighting. I still enjoy it, albeit with a bit of guilt, if I'm being honest. But I'm not an enforcer guy. I don't think we need Sean Thornton, or, you know, we don't need to trade for Lucic or whatever. But, I mean, what do you guys think? Is there any merit to this? Is it just the same thing we hear every year at a certain point?
First of all, I'd like to say that evolution is a wonderful thing. I'm glad that you went through some personal evolution. And I'd also like to thank Cro-Magnon Man for not only getting over his interest in Fire Bad, but also getting to the point where they can use computers. I'm very, very proud of them. I don't know why in an Atlantic division where the Leafs, even if you're playing them well, are their goal differential is plus 25. They score a crap ton of goals. That's what they do. Even if the fancy stats say that they're due for a fall, and that's kind of what I think they say. I have not taken a look at some of the underlying numbers in a bit.
Yep.
But that's That's generally what's going to happen. The other thing, you may or may not run into teams that could cause some real damage for you, and they're not just going to be all tough guys. They're not, you know, beating people up. They're not enforcing their will by physicality. They're just relentless. They don't stop. They don't have moments in their lineup where the play noticeably slows down. Why on earth would you look at Tampa, Buffalo, Toronto, even if you think a couple of those teams are going to take a plunge, or even the way that Montreal has guys like Jesperi Kotkaniemi going off, why would you look at that and say, yeah, they need an enforcer? Why would you say, yeah, they need to keep up with Washington physically, when the first thing that happened this year, the very first iteration of the Boston Bruins in 2018-19 was getting blown out? Completely blown out. What possessed you to believe that was a good idea? I get it. It's frustrating to watch a team who you think is generally pretty good at keeping themselves protected, keeping their teams protected, keeping their star players protected, and it just can't get done, and they can't get around some teams, because that's just sometimes what happens. But frankly, I'm more concerned about when, and this is a more recent trend, when in third periods, the Boston Bruins just stop playing, or at the very least, their quality of shots and quality of attempts goes way, way down. That I'm more worried about than anything regarding toughness. Bruce Cassidy, over this last week, pointed out something very important, is that, you know, they don't have too many guys with size right now, because they're all their guys with size or who are super skilled or super tough are all hurt. And the guys who have been answering the bell are the shrimps, like Grizzlick and and Krug and, you know, shrimp Corrali squad, and all these little short boys that are just angry and full of hatred, just coming at you. And, you know, whether or not they win those fights or they get into those scrums, they're still answering the bell. So I think this is one of those things where fans really need to come to terms that there is a new kind of toughness in hockey. It's not just, you know, rock'em sock'em hockey that you might have watched when you were a kid. It's, you know, these guys don't care as much as you might think. And if they do, that you notice right away, because it ends up being it ends up overtaking what should be the game. So, long story short, I think the idea is well-intentioned, but it's stupid. So I think all should just take a breath, say, let's just get healthy and see where we're at from there. Then you can see how tough they are.
All right.
Sean, how about you?
This guy stepping down from his pulpit. That was Sean's turn.
I think the traditional term for enforcer is just like out of the NHL at this point, right? Like, I think the name that gets thrown around a lot now is Milan Lucic. And I just can't imagine valuing that aspect for, you know, $6 million on a long-term deal. I don't know how many years are left, like 3 or 4?
I think it's 3.
It's like two years longer than Backus, right?
Yeah.
You know, like, I can't five see,
years,
like...
Including this you, year. So, 4 more after this.
Jeez.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't see anybody, even the Edmonton Oilers, valuing that. I mean, but I'm not a huge fan of it, but, like, I understand where people come from with, like, the toughness aspect. Like, I don't... The enforcer, as it was known, Sean Thorntons of the world are pretty much gone at this point. And you have to be able to play hockey at this point to play in the NHL. But, like, I get how people like Wayne Simmonds, who you can drop the gloves but also play top six. Like, I think it's just, like, this kind of fantasy that a lot of fans have. And, like, I hate to break it to you, but, like, those players don't really grow on trees, and you're very lucky if they fall into your grasp. So, and I don't think the Bruins would have the assets, if you're asking, to be able to get Wayne Simmons, even if he's available. And I don't know who else is even out there. Scott Hartnell used to be a good guy. Obviously, he's retired now, right? Like, he hit a brick wall. But, you know, he used to be that kind of guy. There might be a couple others in the league that I'm just not thinking of.
You think about, I really don't like this term, and that's probably just me being a loser, but, like, the power forward thing, like, the Bruins had Luch, like, who was the prototypical for, like, a two-year, maybe three-year span. He was that guy. He was Wayne Simmons. And then, like, they went and signed David Backes to that just terrific, terrific contract. And he was sort of the same guy. You know, like, he's a power forward. He can score. He can hit. He can fight a little bit. And as we all know, if it wasn't obvious from day one, those guys don't age well. Like, clearly.
No, they don't.
Like,
you need to draft them. And, like, that's the only way that you're going to end up with them in your system is if you draft them. So going out and acquiring them, you're either going to overpay by a long shot, or you're going to get a guy who can't play hockey.
Ryan Reeves.
And when Bruins fans are going to, when Bruins fans complain about guys not being able to score, and then you have an enforcer in the lineup who, you know, has bricks for hands, and, like, dude, he's just a guy that's never going to score for you, you know, the next complaint comes up, and now we don't want an enforcer. So I think it's just probably part of the fan base that it's a narrative, or they just kind of miss the old Bruins, which was fun. Like, I grew up, I'm quite a bit younger than you, Colin. Yeah. So, like, I was in seventh grade for that Stanley Cup final.
I was in Iraq.
And, well, I know Iraq might be more fun than middle school.
I would think to see
pros and cons have to do homework, bro. But, get your balls.
You know, I get like where they might come from. It was fun to watch those tough Bruins teams, but the game has changed probably for the better. And, you know, I just don't think it's something you'd want. I don't understand the reason.
It's not like they're going to change. No. Like, the rest of the division isn't going to pick up a enforcer because of that.
Right.
And as much as you'd like to believe so.
But
they're just going to get faster around you.
That's what already has killed it. And if it hasn't, in the fans' minds, that's what will eventually, I think. As Sean is always quick to point out, I'm older than some. And, yeah, I mean, I like a good hockey fight. I don't feel great about it these days, knowing all I do about stuff. But, like, yeah, I grew up with that. You know, people chucking knucks, just like jackhammers at each other. I get it. It was entertaining. You know, I grew up watching boxing and all that. But, it, like, to Sky's point, you know, if the Bruins sign Ryan Reeves, the Montreal Canadiens and the Maple Leafs aren't going to go sign, you know, some dude who's going to score 4 points a year and have 200 penalty minutes. They're just going to keep putting out Tavares and Kadri and Matthews, and they're going to score on Ryan Reeves. And I'm not trying to pick on Ryan Reeves, but he's, like, one of the few true, like, enforcers really left in the league. And, you know, he's part of that, like, you know, I don't like the term, but, like, he's dying breed. There's not a lot of those guys left anymore. And as much as it is entertaining, and even in the days of, like, Sean Thornton, even though he wasn't the biggest guy, like, knowing you had Sean Thornton there, and if he dropped the gloves, he was probably going to win, it's entertaining from, you know, a fan perspective, and it is entertainment business. But one, if you're a fan, you should want your team to win, and I don't think those guys are contributing to the bottom line of winning. And two, like, obviously, head injuries aren't great. Like, you know, and that's something that I think eventually – most fans are going to get on board with and realize, like, as much as we all enjoy it, you know, it's not what's best for the players. So I don't know. We'll see. I don't think that the the team needs it, but I also don't think that that narrative is going to go away anytime soon in this city. You know, and some of it's media driven, respectfully, but like also some of it is just, you know, there are a lot of older fans who grew up in eras, you know, we're getting out of that Bobby Orr era, you know, but even, you know, in the 80s and 90s, you know, people who grew up watching that, that was still a big part of it. So I don't know. I personally, I'm not a fan of it. I don't think it'll help. God knows I loved Lucic when he was here, but I don't want Lucic back on the Bruins. So that's just my
opinion. Definitely not now. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Nope. Sorry. Sorry, Luch. Love you, buddy, but nope. So I think we're all
2018, you can stay.
Yeah. I think we're all in agreement on that. And this is like just, I'm going off on a tangent here as an aside, but like, you know, hashtag shrimp squad here, but I love that, you know, guys like Corrali and, you know, even Wagner, I know that, you know, he was brought in for that a little bit, but like these guys are not big. I love that, you know, Krug too, all of them. I love that they're willing to do that. Like, I know we all mock the grittiness and all that stuff, but like it does mean something to your teammates that you're willing to do it, you know, and like there is some value to that. It's just, I also don't want Torrey Krug chucking nucks at dudes. I want Torrey Krug dropping 60 points, scoring on the power play, and being healthy. And like every once in a while, it's fine. Matt Grizzlick, if you want to fight or whatever, you probably shouldn't. Neither should Corrali. Sorry. But like,
yeah. But I mean, I frankly, if God forbid I was dropped on an NHL team and then I was not immediately killed by the workout, I figured that I'd be more impressed by the little guy going to bat for me than the big guy that I know can do that, because that lets me know that everyone's on board. But that's just me.
Yeah, like it's dumb. It's totally dumb. But like I come from the military, you know, like it's a thing. Like it may not make sense logically, but it's a thing. Teammates love it. I just don't like seeing Krug trading 5 minutes in the box, you know, to fight some dude who plays 12 minutes a night. Like, and I also... Indeed. I don't want him getting hurt, you know, if I'm a fan, and like, I don't know, I'd like to get away from that, but also Kevin Miller's, you know, been injured, and Chara is another guy I really just don't want to see fight. As entertaining as watching Chara scare the living crap out of other players is, like, we need Papa Chara out there on the ice, so I don't know.
Absolutely.
It's been an interesting sort of season to see, you know, like John Crawley got whooped. Sorry, Sean.
Yep.
But like you pick a fight with a guy who's 6'6", you know, has 4 inches of reach on you, it's probably not gonna go over well. God bless you for trying, but you know, you were destined to lose that fight. We'll move on. We vented our spleen on the fighting topic, and the takeaway here, listeners, is that
let's move on.
We do not want Milan Lucic back. Please stop telling us that you want Lucic back. Sean Thornton is not coming out of retirement. Sorry.
He works with the Florida Panthers. He works in Miami. You'd have to drag him out of the arena with a boatload of money. That's not going to happen.
Yep. Sorry. The closest thing we have to an enforcer is Matt Grizzlick.
Just noted goon.
Noted goon.
All right, so I'll transition away from this. One of the topics that we had planned on talking about, and then there was some stuff written about it in various places today, you know, as well. But, you know, everyone's probably already talking about it, is that Bruins management was spotted, theoretically, I guess, scouting. They were at the Calgary versus Edmonton game, the Battle of Alberta, last night, and of course Twitter did its thing, social media did its thing, where it's like, oh, are we trading for Ryan Spooner? Is he coming back? Are we going to get Connor McDavid for Matt Grizzlick?
Time to bring him home.
Like, you know, so it's fun, admittedly. Like, obviously it's fun to speculate about trades. It's not really my thing, but I want to do a quick segment on this, on, you know, if you're Don Sweeney or whatever, who are you trading for? You go up and down the Edmonton Oilers lineup. Is there someone that you say, like, hell yeah, that's an asset that they should be interested in and is feasible? Or is it, you're just going to tell me, nah, like,
GMs catch a lot of games. It happens, and we know that. We're in the press box. There are always scouts. There are always GMs there. But play along, if you will. Let's take a look at the Oilers roster and tell me, you know, pick maybe one or two guys you think that might be reasonable and worthwhile.
It's tough because there's a couple of guys I feel like on both squads that could probably do with a change of scenery. I know that they just got him and it would be impossible to dislodge him from that lineup. But man, I wish that they had the opportunity to during this offseason and they didn't get Elias Lindholm. He is a Calgary player and his 5-on-5 stuff, his shot share, his shots for and against, and his expected goals for percentage is so good.
Yes.
Oh my God, he's so good.
Shout out to me, owning him in fantasy. I can attest. Yeah, 16 goals, 18 assists, 34 points in 31 games played. He has been
so good.
Far more than I think Calgary even expected. He's been incredible so far this year.
And on the other side, on the other side, there are really only two names that come to mind because they technically fill the void that I want to see from them. There is my hope is that by looking at this kid, because they've been doing this poor kid dirty all year long, is Puljujarvi, who has been not great. He's been also playing with probably the dregs of the Oilers for most of his run, or Oscar Klefbom, which was another player that would take an arm and a leg to get, but he's still pretty much the answer to what are you going to do without Zdeno Chara in a year or two. He's seems to be doing okay, all things considered. His 5-on-5 numbers haven't suffered super bad. His points share has gone down, but that's fine. He's a defenseman. And hey, Peter Chiarelli's in charge. Who knows what it would take to get a half-decent player out of him? We've already seen that you can convince him that some pretty bad players, in hindsight, are actually quite worth the investment. So you never know. Maybe float Wiley Sherman. Maybe float Forsbacka Carlson, something like that at them. You never know. And that, I think, is the real fun part about I think that's actually why people went off on Twitter and on social media about the Oilers, because we know that the Oilers will do whatever dumb thing they want, and no one can predict them. No one could possibly imagine the kinds of boneheaded trades they've made with Chiarelli at the helm, with the asset mismanagement that they've done. You could convince yourself that you could make a pretty big steal if you're calling Peter Chiarelli every other day.
You done, Sky?
I might be. And no, go on ahead.
Yeah, I think I agree with you on the Edmonton players, and that you could probably fool Peter Chiarelli. Just because I don't know. People talk about Krug, and I don't understand that, because in my opinion, he's only traded away skill for guys he thinks are good two-way players that I mean, Adam Larson's actually he's a decent player. Obviously, he's nowhere as close to Taylor Hall. Like, so he's always gonna take like too much heat for that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I just can't see Torrey Krug's been like the most talked about player in which the Bruins would give up, and I can't see that happening. I could see it happening, just not in season, right? Like, I think you have a major effect on the locker room if you trade away a guy like Torrey Krug in the middle of the season. I understand it. I think it's business in the off season, and also you give time for, you know, grieving.
Yeah,
like you're forcing a guy away from a city, away from his friends. You know, him and his wife have a home here. I would assume they have a home in the Boston area.
I know he's from Michigan.
I can pay for it, like, so no excuse.
Yeah. But, you know, it is, they are humans after all. I think sometimes people forget that. And so I just can't see that happening in the middle of the season, right? Because, mm-hmm. like, the talk is Ryan Nugent Hopkins for Torrey Krug. And I just can't see that happening in the middle of the season. I think it would be more of, like, maybe a depth piece from Edmonton. I don't know what Edmonton – I mean, they're bad for a reason. I don't understand. I don't know what assets they'd give up. They're kind of like that weird team that Pajarvi is – I know I didn't pronounce that right, but I'm not – I tried to learn Finnish one time, and it just didn't go well. It
didn't stick.
Yeah, I have such an English tongue, I think. Like, sometimes French words and everything, it come out weird. Mm. But he's interesting because, like, as Sky said, like, he's kind of been buried and, in my opinion, like, completely mistreated by the organization. Yamamoto is probably someone who they're not going to give up, you know, cheap, but is obviously cheaper than RNH. But it's kind of like a weird roster.
But
I just think maybe it was
Jujur Kyra is second line center. Second line left wing.
It's so top heavy because, you know, they have two very good players in Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, and then I think he's a little bit below their class, but then you start talking about Klefbom and RNH. And then below that, there's, like, nothing.
There's Ryan Spooner.
Right.
There's Ryan Spooner.
Yeah, there's a big drop off.
See, I would take Ryan Spooner back in a heartbeat for, like, if he was a pending UFA, mm-hmm. on a, like, a decent deal, like, this is so that you can afford it. But he's on the first year. Yeah. I don't think I thought it was a $4 million deal.
Yes, it is, because he got paid.
It's like a two-year $4 million deal now.
3.1 per. Yeah.
3.1. Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
But still, I wouldn't, I don't want to have him next year kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, we tried Ryan Spooner. I don't think it worked out. But I would take him back.
He'd be okay.
Yeah.
But if you're –
Yeah, but because there's that second year, I wouldn't take them.
Right.
They don't – let's see. They have pending RFAs, obviously. Their pending UFA is Chiasson, who I'd have no interest in.
Kyle Brusiak.
Chris Weidman I'd have interest in, but – the Bruins have, like, too many D on a healthy roster as it is. I know, like, obviously they're very unhealthy right now, are very injured.
Sickly.
Yeah. So it makes no sense to try to get Chris Weidman unless you're trying to put, you know, a piece or two on them. But you're not getting a big return anyway. So I don't know. I just can't see the two teams making a deal. I feel like it was probably, as much as it was, you know, business as well, I think part of it was probably just Don just kind of getting away and maybe going to see an old friend and you know, kind of getting two birds with one stone. I don't see them being able to do business together.
Yeah, so
enjoying beautiful Edmonton Oilers oiled popcorn.
Yeah,
smother it all right on there.
I think the easy, you know, the like, what's the term looking for here? Like, skin deep, I guess, you look at it and you say, like, oh, he must be scouting, you know, Shirelli's team, hoping to fleece him. But like I said, you look at that roster and, like, we don't need to bag on
Shirelli
any more than everyone already has. But, I mean, it's not great. And the few good players, like Sean mentioned, are well out of the Bruins. You know, like, it's just not feasible. They're not going to trade for Connor McDavid or Draisaitl or RNH or And if they did, it would it'd have to include Krug and probably other pieces. And you get into that whole argument of like, you take two, you know, one step forward, two steps back sort of thing. And I don't see that. And the flip side is like, he could have been there to scout Calgary theoretically, but Calgary's doing pretty well for themselves. And I'd be surprised. I don't think that they're going to trade, but I do like one name that I just think is interesting. Yeah, I'm just curious, like, you know, Austin Zarnik has been alternating in and out of the lineup there. He's on a 2-year contract at 1.25 per year. I'm curious, would you give up, you know, an asset to get him back to fix your third line center role? Because I think he would be a better option at third line than JFK or Cave or Backus or the other 1,700 people that they've tried there.
I mean, I think... Go ahead, Sky.
Well, the obvious answer to that is can't be much worse, but... I think it'd be, especially for NHL GMs who are still human, it'd be... I'm not sure it'd be a super great PR move for the team to go, hey, we gave up this guy, and now we realize we didn't really know what we had in him, and so, hey, bud, welcome back.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he's playing pretty well in the maybe 10 minutes a night he gets every other 2 weeks, but it wouldn't be a bad idea. I'm sure you could convince Treleving?
Treleving?
Yep. Treleving. That is a investment worth taking.
All right, so let me step in again here and propose this, because the money works. Mm-hmm. It's exactly even money in term. Chris Wagner for Austin Zarnik. Do you make that trade?
Yeah.
Twice on Sundays.
Sorry, Walpole. We love you, Walpole. Sorry.
We're actually sending Walpole the entire city. We're just cutting it out like it's a Looney Tunes cartoon and sending it off to Alberta. Congratulations. You are all now Canadian citizens.
Yeah, I mean, Wagner probably has a little bit of value, but even if you have to throw in a second or a third or, like, whatever, I don't know. But, like, I make that trade because this third-line center thing, as much as JFK has looked, like, marginally better, I don't think this year he's an answer. I know he's going to end up being great, and I'm going to look like an idiot. It happens. But, like, I just don't see it with him right now. So, like,
everyone thought that the automobile wasn't going to kick in. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't think Zarnik's, like, you know, a great player or anything. But I think that he could help you. And he's definitely being mismanaged in Calgary. You know, even their beat guys are saying as much. If you follow the team, a lot of them are, like, wondering why he's getting scratched when he's looked productive in the limited minutes that he's getting. So he'd be interesting, but I think if we've learned anything covering this team is that, you know, we expect it to be X and it's going to be Y, and that Y is going to be Don Sweeney 100% trading for James Neal and his five-year contract at $5.75 million per year. And I say this as the one dude in Boston who actually advocated for signing James Neal in the offseason. Might be my worst take.
I remember that one.
Yep.
I told you so.
Said, in fairness, they have also mismanaged James Neal. Like, I'm sorry, James Neal scored 20 goals or more every season he's been in the league. He goes to Calgary and he's just been, like, abysmal. But, like, how much of that is James Neal and how much is the team not using him correctly? Like, he's legit one of the best goal scorers in the league. Like, if you're not going to use him in those situations, that's... I don't follow Calgary every game, but, like, obviously his contract was way, way too long, way too much money. But, like, that's the kind of deal I'm, like, I'd lose sleep over if I'm a Bruins fan. We all think he's going there to scout, you know, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, and he's going to come back with James Neal on his five-year contract to play alongside David Backus with the world's most expensive fourth line. Yeah, sorry for that nightmare, Bruins fans. Sorry.
I need a drink after hearing that.
But, like, that's when I think of Sweeney making trades, that's what I see. You know. So we'll see. I don't know.
They wanted to absorb half his contract. Maybe then you look at it, but even then, you know, it goes all the way through 2022-23, and you know, I think the Bruins are trying to get that sort of money off their books right now, not trying to put it on. I hope so. We'll see.
Definitely going to be a fun off season next year, or even this one.
Yep.
Who knows? We'll never know.
All right. So that,
until we get there,
that's our trade speculation 2018. We'll move into just a quick look ahead at the next few weeks. We actually have the Winter Classic coming up, which is crazy. You know, on January 1st, if there's any healthy players left to even compete in that for the Bruins. But
I for one think it's really nice that we've hyped up a product in the middle of South Bend, Indiana, and everyone's saying it's going to be one of the greatest things ever. And then what's probably going to happen is two teams that are profoundly, profoundly overrated and probably very, very not as good as we all expected them to be, show up and play a pretty mediocre game. Surely in the history of South Bend, that has never, ever happened whatsoever.
What about Notre Dame?
Yeah, what about...
you bring that up. What about Notre Dame? What about the police?
Sorry.
Winter Classic in Copland. That's what
they
should call
it. Sorry about Anders Bjork. Don't listen to us. Earmuffs.
Yeah, definitely don't want to listen to me.
No, that Winter Classic game, I don't know. I think Winter Classic games are, like, cool the first couple times they did it, and the novelty is just, like, immediately worn off for me, even, you know, with the Bruins being in it, like, 100 times now. But, like...
It'd be way cooler if, you know, they kept it to one game. Maybe even two if you wanted it to be an all-Canada thing.
One game to me is, like, especially if it's going to be the Blackhawks every year versus, like, you know, the Penguins and Bruins alternating. Like,
yeah, that's the other thing, is that... Why not pull up a team that no one has even thought of, or the vast majority of hockey media isn't thinking about? Like, why not have the Winter Classic in Arizona State Stadium versus the Coyotes and Florida? Yeah, let's just get weird.
You say that the NHL would totally do that. It'd be Las Vegas versus
Kidding me? Yeah. I'd go to that. That's awesome. That's exactly the kind of crazy stuff that I know that the NHL can do. And they just refuse to do it because they're cowards.
Yeah.
Instead, we're going to have we're going to have the Chicago Blackhawks every other year basically being, getting an opportunity to be on TV, on NBC, mostly to get killed. That's the other thing, is that, you know, we spend all this time talking about the Chicago Blackhawks getting favoritism and all that when it comes to the Winter Classic. If I were a Blackhawks fan, I'd never want to go to another Winter Classic again, because they've lost every one of them except one. They've lost every single outdoor game except one that they played.
To be fair, the Bruins dropped a massive turd on us in their last one.
They're 500. It's cool.
The Philly one was good, but I mean, like, a Winter Classic with the Bruins in it, and there's no Chara, no Bergeron, presumably. Hopefully they're back, but, you know, we're close enough now where they very, very may well not play in that game. Like, what's the point? I mean, like, Pasta's great, Marchand's great. Like, they're still good players, but, like, if you're going to have...
Don't you want to see what that Winter Classic jersey is with, like, straining to try and keep Forsbacka Carlson's name on it?
Hell yeah.
I guarantee you, they weren't ready for that.
Steven Kampfer. Yep, that's who I am looking forward to watching in the...
Sure am ready to see... let's go down the depth chart here. Jamel Smith, who, by the way, was a recent pickup.
Yep.
Who played for the Boston Bruins in the Winter Classic.
0-2 in the Jamel Smith era.
Yeah.
The GOAT.
Yeah. We're clearly, it's already over for the Blackhawks. They shouldn't even come.
Yep. No.
It should just be an team scrimmage.
That's the thing. Like, I mean, I think the Bruins are better than they look right now, obviously, with injuries. But, like, I don't know if I consider the Bruins contenders right now. And then, like, the Blackhawks, the Blackhawks are not good. Like, they're not trying to be good.
Yeah, they suck.
I know that the, you know, NBC and the league didn't
necessarily know that was going to be the case, but like your team yeah, is Taze and Kane, and that's pretty much it. The shell of, you know, Seabrook, like they're not going to be good. So
yeah, I who could have guessed?
Well, if you watched their GM. Chicago's offseason,
you should have known. you had every warning sign and you just plowed right through it.
Yeah.
You got to the house with a guy with a hockey mask and chainsaw. This is your own fault at this point.
Yeah, so I mean, I'll still watch it because I love hockey. I'm going to watch everything.
What else?
But, like, that's just not a good Winter Classic. I don't love the location. I don't love the opponents. I don't love the skill level. I don't
love the location.
Like, it's just – and I thought about flying out there to cover it. You know, like, hey, it'd be cool to tell my grandkids I covered the Winter Classic with the Bruins and Blackhawks. And, like – Blackhawks were my second team growing up. My grandfather like got drafted by him or whatever, and like it's like it would have been cool for me, but like I'm not paying $600 or whatever to fly out there to watch a 1-1 or 1-0 game.
And on the week of Christmas too.
Yeah, like it's just
like
Christmas comes on a Monday this year. You've got maybe roughly a week that I'm sure is not going to be completely filled to the gills with people trying to get back to Indianapolis or whatever the hell to go watch a regular season hockey game that means nothing between two teams that are not going to be as good as they should be. And on top of that, you got to deal with Notre Dame people, which is the worst part of it all.
Sorry, Anders.
My God.
Yeah, it's going to be a dud. Like, even if the Bruins come out and they play well and it's entertaining, like, it's still just... It's just a stupid regular season game. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I don't know. Not my thing. But
frankly, I'm cool with the jersey. I think it looks okay. I would take or leave the game. I'd have much preferred this to just be a regular season contest in a normal building. And let's just throw two teams that have never played each other in the Winter Classic that no one would have even considered next time. Let's just go crazy. If you're going to have these outdoor games... Do something ballistic.
Yeah, here we go.
Let's have it in the NASCAR arena.
Nope, Seattle. The new Seattle Rink, one.
Racetrack.
Yeah. Have it going on during
they did
a racing event. That'd be cool.
They did a football game inside Bristol Motor Speedway.
Oh yeah.
A couple years ago.
At
which is like hundreds. I think they could sit like 110, 120,000 people in Tennessee, which is obviously Nashville Predators, which are a very popular team.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, NHL loves their Blackhawks because, you know, you got to think of the business side of it as well. You know, you're going to get more people to tune in. They're fourth most valuable franchise in the NHL, and they just bring in view. So if you did Blackhawks Preds inside Bristol Motor Speedway, that could be interesting.
That'd be sick.
I don't know how the signing would work though, because like that obviously a football game might be easier to kind of follow along, and obviously it's a half mile track. So it might be too big of a facility, but that's a very interesting
look. I just want to see idea. Who brings hat. I just want to see who brings a t-shirt cannon to shoot a catfish onto the ice. You know, someone in Nashville's got one.
I think
one.
You're gonna get a call from PETA. You're gonna get a call from PETA on that one.
I think that Bridgestone sends all of those inquiries to the. Yes, to the Colorado Avalanche. And I think it's actually listed on their website. Any complaints? Please go to @PatrickWaugh.
Yeah, I did not expect NASCAR and catfish references in this episode, but never in a million years because of the business side, like Sean mentioned, happened, but like the novelty of Winter Classic is just gone for me. Like it's not special.
100%. Like, so you got to put it back in. What
would be,
and that requires taking risks.
Yeah, catfishing and shooting them out of cannons. But
yeah,
what I would like to see, and like again, never going to happen. But like in Colin's stupid brain, it's just like literally like pond hockey, like Northern Canada, like mountains in the background, like no crowds. Just get the camera crew out there on an empty pond and watch two NHL teams play. Like, I would watch the crap out of that. Give me that. Give me good camera work and just like open pond hockey with NHL teams. I'll watch that. The novelty will wear off if they do it six times a year. But like that, you have my interest. But watching the Bruins or the Blackhawks play in yet another regular season game that they hype up for an entire year just to watch the Bruins lose, like, not my thing.
Well, as I've stated, history is on their side, so they're probably going to win that game. It's just not going to be as fun as you think it is.
If they don't, I'm blaming you, Sky.
That's okay. I can live with that.
Responsibility is on your shoulders.
I can absolutely live with that kind of pain.
All right, and with pain, we'll wrap this up. We went long on this episode. Thank you to all of our listeners. As always, follow us on Twitter at SB Unsupervised. You can follow me, if you're brave enough, at C. Beswick on Twitter. You can follow Sean at the Sean Ferris. And Sky, I believe yours is at Sky on Air. Is that what it is?
At Sky on Air _.
There you go. Follow
some prick who had at Sky on Air.
Follow the man. As always, we are legitimately open. If you want to leave comments, feedback, ratings, whatever, you want to tell us what topics you want to hear about, or tell us that we're terrible. Cool.
Tell us about a goal that you liked.
Yeah.
So, cool.
Tell us how wrong we are. We're used to it. But thanks for listening. I did
send it to at Scott Matla.
You leave Scort out of this. I did want to tease, we are expecting to have a very special guest in a special episode that will drop either Friday, this coming Friday, or Monday. So for those following along at home, that will be the 14th or the 17th, respectively. Don't want to give away too much, but I'll share more on Twitter as it becomes available. Otherwise, you'll hear from us in 2 weeks. Thanks for tuning in, and thank you, Sky and Sean.